You're listening to The Plug with Neil Griffith.
Very good. All right. Hey, everybody. Welcome to The Plug Podcast with Neil Griffiths. With me, Neil Griffiths. Thanks for coming on. Thanks for joining us. As always, before we get started, if you haven't already, check us out on Instagram, at The Plug with Neil Griffiths, or on TikTok, at theplug.podcast. Subscribe, follow, like, join in on The Plug Podcast fun. We've got another awesome episode this week, and I'm stoked to be joined by Dan Searle, founding member and drummer of UK Giants Architects. Dan jumped on the show ahead of the band's return to Australia later this month, where they'll play shows in Adelaide, Melbourne, Sydney, and Brisbane. For tickets, head to livenation.com.au. Fans will know that the band's 10th album, The Classic Symptoms of a Broken Spirit, was released last November. Dan and I spoke about the reception to the record so far, and dealing with some criticism about the new sound from Architects, and Dan told me he has a theory as to why some trolls have come after the band. We also spoke about what's next for Architects. Of course, founding member and Dan's brother Tom passed away in 2016, and Dan spoke a bit about how that's impacted the band and its fan base, including not wanting to play some specific songs live anymore. And to top it off, Dan has revealed that he's already talking about album number 11 with the band, and it won't sound like any of their previous records to date. And just a quick disclaimer as well, Dan actually did this podcast while he was in his car in London, so the audio may be a little bit weird at times, but overall it's fine, I promise. Just blame London and Bluetooth headphones. Check it out. Here is the full episode with Dan Searle from Architects on The Plug Podcast. All right, we're rolling, and on this episode, I am joined by a man who is currently driving. He's in the London streets as we speak. I'm joined by Architects drummer Dan Searle. Dan, thanks for coming on, man. I appreciate the dual tasking here.
Ah, it's my pleasure. This is good. This is a good use of my time. If I was just driving, listening to music, I'd be getting nothing done. At least I'm being productive whilst I'm on this long journey.
I was going to say, like, obviously, I'm in New York, and it is currently 6:20 in the morning. I'm proud of myself for getting up this early. What time is it in London right now?
It is 11:20.
Oh, good morning.
Yeah, it's still morning here. Nice, cold, frosty morning.
How is everything going, man? I know you guys have been doing some shows throughout Europe, and I imagine you've got a little bit of downtime now between now and the Australian tour.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, we were just in Germany predominantly, which went really, really well. It exceeded our expectations, which I'm going to say doesn't always happen. So that was nice. And it was nice to get in front of people and play these songs. You know, I've spoken about it a lot lately, but just releasing two albums in a pandemic and not playing any of those 26 songs that we've released is a weird place to be. But just in the sense that you don't get a chance to see the real life impact of the music you're making, which is obviously something that you're used to getting. You're always getting that physical feedback in front of your eyes. Whereas, you know, the last few years, we've been just sort of sustaining ourselves off of comments saying that our band sucks. So it's been a nice it's been a nice change of pace.
What's fucking wild is, like, here we are talking about the classic symptoms of a broken spirit. This is album number 10, and you just mentioned that, you know, you've released essentially two albums in a lockdown. Yeah. Are you guys just churning these out just because you're creatively inspired? Is it because you were bored in the pandemic and thought, well, fuck, what else are we going to do? Like, there are so many bands I've had on this podcast that, you know, maybe didn't even produce a song during the pandemic because they thought, well, what's the fucking point? What was the situation for you guys specifically in the pandemic?
It's both factors. It was to prevent us from being bored, I suppose. I feel as though there is always a pretty healthy level of creative inspiration within the band. And the only thing that kind of stifles that normally is touring. So when you took that out of the equation, we were kind of left with, well, let's make music. Which, to be honest, is my favorite part of being in a band, you know, I love making the songs, and obviously the opportunity to perform them in front of a crowd and see that feedback is a special aspect without a shadow of a doubt. But the opportunity to just stay at home and make records was kind of perfect for me, to be honest. I mean, I've got two young kids, so is Josh, who is the other sort of key writer in the band. So for us, it suited us down to the ground. And I mean, to be totally honest with you, I was seeing other bands be completely inactive, and I was scratching my head. I couldn't understand it. I have band, you know, there are bands that I've friends with who had just finished records as the lockdowns began, and then they sat on the records until 2 years later. And I just kind of, I got to be honest, I can't understand that. I just felt like, you know, let's make hay. It's time, you know, just because this pandemic has happened doesn't mean we can't be productive, doesn't mean we can't move the band forward. And, you know, like, I would go as far as saying we had a good pandemic. You know, for those who wish to exist in particular, it was such a big success. It was number one in Australia and number one over here in the UK. It did well everywhere, really, to be honest. It surpassed all our other records. And, I feel like where other bands just sat around waiting to see it out, we managed to push our band forward and gained like a ton of new fans, managed to transition to a new style successfully without, you know, we shit online, but the reality was that the band picked up a whole new audience, which we've seen, you know, manifest in reality now. It's just what we do. I really have to make a conscious effort to pump the brakes, to be honest. Yeah, you know, having done two records back to back, we really have to just pump the brakes now and wait until, you know, we've toured around the world a couple of times, and then we can start thinking about recording and releasing something else, which is my nature is kind of like just to want to constantly create and to try new things. Now we have to try and focus on these records, and you know, it's exciting and still, to be honest, kind of surreal that we can go out and do this again. It's the strangest thing. The pandemic gave you this sense that things might never be normal again, and I get that some aspects of our lives might not be, and there's some parts of the world that are still recovering, some aspects of industry and supply chain still recovering. All that aside, the eerie familiarity of going back on tour is quite strange. Although, rationally speaking, it only stopped for a few years. There was a time when bands would stop for a few years, and that wasn't such a strange thing. But now we're always on the hustle. It's always on the grind of touring around the world, which, you know, unfortunately, it's a pretty great job. So I know it's going to feel surreal, but bizarrely familiar when we touch down on
it. And usually when we're talking about an album, especially on this podcast, it's usually in the lead up to the release. Obviously, the Classic Symptoms came out in October last year. You've sat on it for a few months now. Obviously, you've been able to do some live shows. How is it sitting with the band now, and how have the fans reacted to it, especially live?
Oh, it's been great, man. Like, honestly, my existing in an online space, my expectations.
Don't ever do that. Don't ever do that.
I know. I can't be trusted with social media. I really, really can't. I don't have the apps on my phone, but still, like, the addictive qualities will draw me in. I don't have a personality to withstand the algorithm, but I'm too weak. But stepping into the real physical reality, you know, the one we've always been in before the internet. It's been such a trip, but you know, it's actually the cool part of having suffered through a quite considerable amount of online abuse for writing songs, the upside has been we just went out into Germany and played to 5,000, 6,000, 7,000 people a night, and they all fucking loved the new songs and sang along and went mental. And I've got to tell you, it felt pretty good. Just my expectations were pretty fucking low, and the reality was pretty fucking good. So,
but this is the thing, yeah, especially with people who live on YouTube. Like, if you don't, let's say you don't like a song, to write that on their post, like, this is shit and here's why. It's like you've had a pretty bad day, and all the usernames are like Big Tits McGee. Like, they're not real critics. I post these interviews online, and like, luckily I'm usually like, this is great, this is fun. There'll be an odd guy's like, what's wrong with that guy's fucking face? And you want to write back like, fuck you, but then you're like, what's the point? And you know that these are just like, they're literal fucking trolls. The people who would see you live, you're like, you're not going to have 5,000 people in Germany, all the YouTube haters there going, fuck, this is shit.
You're absolutely right, and these are things that I know, and I should, you know, and when it comes down to it, I should know better in the moment. But you know, eventually you start to feel as though the evidence is starting to stack against you. And you know, I'm pretty insecure. Most people probably are. And so when it comes to writing something and it's, you know, you feel like it's very personal to you, and then someone is happy to just go, well, this is shit. I simply don't have the neurological hardware to overcome that equation. But that's the world we live in now, isn't it? Mm-hmm. You know, there's no getting away from that. People like to say what they like. They like to say their opinion for whatever reason, and it's now like that's as anyone who's look, it's not just artists, right? It's like you dare have a fucking opinion on the internet, you better put on some body armor, you know what I mean?
Looking for a new sound in 2023? The new ATH TWX9 is Audio-Technica's flagship true wireless headphone. These fully customizable premium buds deliver incredible high fidelity audio with adaptive noise cancelling and dual microphones for professional call quality. So whether you're listening to your favorite tunes, podcasts, or just looking for some peace and quiet, step up your headphone game with the new ATH TWX9. Available now at JB Hi-Fi Australia and audiotechnica.com.
It's interesting as well, because like, I'm thinking of other times I've had artists on the podcast who, like, I mean, I guess this album can be called divisive in the sense that historical Architects fans, you know, they love the heavy aspect of this band. Obviously, that means the earlier sounds of the band. But I'm thinking of times like I've had Ollie on from Bring Me the Horizon when they released Ammo, Matt from Bullet for My Valentine, Winston from Parkway. Their last album is probably much different to the rest. I hate using the word divisive, because divisive implies shit. But it's not. It's just it's an album that doesn't sound traditionally like what the band probably is, quote unquote, meant to sound like. But like, why is it with this kind of genre in particular, the heavier side of things, that the fans get so riled up? Because it's not like you guys went out and made a fucking country album.
I've got a theory on this.
Okay.
It took me a long time to realize. It took me until I was, you know, into the late 20s, maybe my 30s. To realize that the reason I started playing heavy music, although it on the surface it didn't seem, if you met me or any of my bandmates, like we would be in a quote unquote screamy heavy metal band. But
I think that's a Spotify genre, screamy metal heavy band. Yeah,
I think that's the subgenre now. but if you probably knew more about us, you'd find that we probably didn't have a healthy outlet for our anger. We weren't taught to have a healthy outlet for our anger by our parents. Our anger was an unacceptable emotion to be expressed in the family home. I can only really speak for myself, of course, but this was definitely the case.
Yeah.
I think that for most listeners of heavy music, on some level, that is what is happening. The music speaks to them because it speaks to that part of them which they feel they are unable to express in normal daily life. Or perhaps they, as a child, they've learnt to bury it completely, meaning that the music is perhaps even more necessary for them to feel normal, if you like, in their day-to-day life. So when someone finds the remedy or the medicine for this problem, and they grow to love that medicine because it makes them feel better again, and then the provider of that medicine goes, well, actually, the medicine's going to change. And actually, we're not necessarily going to even be medicating for anger anymore at all. Some of these songs might be tapping into other feelings entirely. Maybe they're feelings that you just don't have any interest in or don't have any need to access, or, you know. So, obviously, then they're going to feel angry. And so they go on the internet and they let you know that they're angry. And I think that my theory is that is why it's more prevalent in heavy genres, because heavy music is a way for people to tap into their anger in a healthy way. So I think that's why people say we're fucking shit all the time.
Yeah, well, I got to give a shout out to the Downbeat podcast. I saw you and Sam were on that show a couple of months ago, and it's similar to what you were saying. Like, a band evolves, right? Like, and yeah. It was interesting to hear, like, you guys were starting to have conversations about not wanting to play older songs like Gone with the Wind, for example, because, you know, it deals with grief and it deals with the passing of the late, great Tom Searle. I guess to be in a position where it's like you have to stay in that period of time and you have to produce that music, who the fuck is that helping? That's not helping you. That's giving your fans no, like, change or new direction in the music. That's not healthy for literally anyone, right?
No. Well, yeah, the problem is when especially when a band hits a certain size, you are dealing with lots of different people's emotions and feelings and opinions, and invariably some people will feel different. At some point, you just have to make decisions for yourself and be brave enough to make them. And to be honest, when we were making these two records in the pandemic, it felt like we were taking a massive, massive risk. And we knew that we were going to get people riled up. We knew that we were going to get abuse for it. And the reality is, to be honest with you, I couldn't have imagined that we could have gotten away with it to the degree to which we have. I have to pinch myself, and I really was at the shows we just played, thinking, you know, because we were in Germany. Germany is fucking horns up, you know what I mean?
Mm.
Like, they love their music. Germany, to me, from my experience, is the home of metal. That country does like 58 metal festivals every summer, and all of them are sold out. You know, like, England can't sustain two. So when we switched up, and Germany was, you know, like, Holy Hell was really popular in Germany. And so when we did Those Who Wish to Exist, I was really concerned that we were going to alienate a country that had been a real home for us in the second home. And to be honest with you, we've gotten away with it. I use the phrase gotten away with it. It sounds like I've, like, committed a fucking crime. Gotten away with crime. But it does feel that way sometimes.
Well, similar to what you said on that Downbeat podcast, where, like, you know, when you guys were playing certain songs, fans were looking at you, and if you weren't completely, like, in a dark, deep zone, then you might think that they don't think, or you don't think, they think you care.
The situation with Tom made it that, like, very unique and complicated, and unlike anything that most bands have to deal with. That, like, and obviously the extra dimension is he was my twin brother. Mm. So when Sam is singing Tom's words about Tom contemplating his own death, and I'm there goofing around or whatever, it's not a good mix. And to be honest, like being dragged into that place every night is just like borderline unhealthy. Now, like, I do obviously believe that, like, facing up to those situations, your grief or whatever it is, whatever suffering you are dealing with, there is an element of necessity to do that. Now, I've done a lot of that on my own time, and I still do that on my own time. The place I don't want to do it anymore is behind a drum set.
Yeah.
But, you know, again, like, look, even my mum was pissed off that we stopped playing Gone With The Wind. You know what I mean? Like,
she was one of the YouTube commenters, wasn't she?
Probably, yeah. I mean, to be honest with you, it's probably oversharing, but I told her we weren't going to play that anymore. And she cried, you know. She was so that upset that we weren't going to be playing it because it brought her, I get, you know, that song helps her feel like it brings her closer to her son that she's lost. But
of course,
she doesn't have to get on stage and play it every night, right? So I have to even say to her, like, I'm sorry, you know, I can't do this. Sam can't do this. It's you know, it's probably most unfair on Sam out of all of us, I would say.
And again, I mentioned earlier, it's wild to think that the Classic Albums is the band's 10th album. Yeah, and obviously Australia is such a special place for you guys because touching on Tom, you guys went there, less than 2 weeks after his passing. I know that Australia is a very special place for you guys and vice versa. What is it about Australia that is so special for Architects? Because again, other bands, without putting you in that genre, the Bring Me the Horizons and the Bullet for My Valentines, obviously they have massive Australian fan base. But Architects in particular, it's a different ball game. Do you know why that is?
No idea. I mean, it's I feel like you're right. Of all the countries, you know, if I think back to 2007, 2008, 2009, so we went there first time 2009.
Yeah.
By that point, we had been everywhere, and Australia was kind of the last place. You know, I'm talking about we've been everywhere at least once. So it was still, we were still proving ourselves. We were still discovering the world, the touring landscape, the global circuit, like. And of all the places that embraced us the quickest and that required the least work for us to sort of gain a foothold, Australia was the one. Given we got amazing opportunities straight away. We were lucky that our second European tour was with Parkway Drive, and we hit it off. And you may or may not know, but Parkway Drive don't hit it off with many bands. So they invited us on tour in Australia with them, which, you know, at that point they were already flying there, you know, thousands of people. So we got great exposure straight away. I guess we went there off Hollow Crown. So we had done a few albums, and Hollow Crown was, as everybody knows, the kind of first one that sort of made an impact on the genre. And so I feel like it was a good blend of those two things. We were in a good moment. It was a good first opportunity, and it kind of just snowballed from there really nicely. And yeah, I mean, God, we must have been 10 times. And it's always a blast, and, you know, it's all the places around the world. I feel like we just have so many close friends there, you know, people in bands, people not in bands, and it's definitely somewhere that, for whatever reason, the band is just fit. It's just been a resonance there. We've always gelled well, the country, the people, and people just seem to get what we do, and long may it continue.
I feel like, and again, I was working for a music media company predominantly through that 2015 to 2021 period. And every time you guys released an album, it was like on a, not on the level, but on a similar level to like, oh shit, guys, Taylor Swift and or Beyonce are getting ready to release an album. So everyone get ready. You guys were and are this thing where it's like, it is like now Parkway Drive is probably the biggest metal band that has come out of Australia. Yeah. And then there's Architects. That's the best way I can describe it. It's such a crazy but awesome thing to see.
Yeah, yeah, no, it's and we're sort of loosely aware of it, and we're I think, you know, I would say we're proud of it. We're grateful that we're in this position. I like, you know, the idea that people all over the world, as far as, you know, it's still a trip to me. We've been doing this forever, you know, like we're going on 20 years since our first record. And I still, I think as I grow older, I gain more of an appreciation and more of a deeper sort of, a deeper appreciation of the fact that people do have their own relationships with these songs. Like, you know, you finish them and then you sort of put them out, send them out to the world, and people have their own independent relationships with them that are nothing to do with us, you know? I don't know these people. I don't know their lives or how they feel or think, and yet they have can have like a close relationship with something that we created that is sort of a very personal part of ourselves. It's a trip, man. I think it's worth anyone in a creative position like us to ruminate on that, think about that, because it's a pretty special thing to be a part of.
And that 2016 tour in particular, again, with how soon it happened, I know people who were at that concert, like, they were also in tears. Like, they also now, it's almost like they feel part of the band. They're fans. And then there are people who are like, this is the Architects in a circle.
It was cancelled halfway through. It's fucking ridiculous. Yeah. Only got laryngitis.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. I was like, but by the time I heard that the tour was cancelled, I was staying at John from North Lane's apartment. Like, because John was someone that was close with Tom, and Tom had just died, and so we stayed in with his partner, and we had a bottle of wine, and I talked them through everything that happened with Tom, experiences at the hospice, how Tom was when he was dying, really, you know, all this stuff. Woke up the next morning on a sofa, kind of hungover, text message, bring me the horizon, already on a plane home. I didn't even know the tour was cancelled. It was fucking insanity.
You would think Ollie or someone could have sent you a fucking text.
Well, yeah, I mean, the rest of the guys at the hotel, I guess they saw them. I was none the wiser, but yeah. Anyway, that's another story. But that's honestly, I was really aware of this at the time, that we were like, that whole All Our Gods Have Abandoned Us cycle was going to be this like unique once in a lifetime experience that I couldn't draw a parallel between what we were going to do on that cycle and any other band. Obviously, people in bands die all the time. You know, we had toured with Suicide Silence, for instance. Mitch had died. Mm-hmm. They get a new singer, eventually carry on. The unique thing that we went through was Tom had just written an album about dying or contemplating his mortality. Then we were going to go out immediately after he died and perform shows, playing songs about him dying, so people who knew that he had just died. And it created like the most powerful emotional experiences, and you know, like it, in many senses, I feel like it helped accelerate my path through my own grief, which obviously then was only benefited further by then writing Holy Hell, which was about my sort of end of that experience. But with the shows we were playing when we toured All Our Gods, especially those Australian shows, and then we did a UK and European tour right after. The band suddenly got way bigger. I always say it was like Tom had like left this. He had built this bonfire, this huge pile of kindling, and I knew the album was good. We all knew the album was good, and then him dying was like throwing the match on it, and the band just blew up like to a level that Tom never experienced. And it was like, it was through those, that unique set of circumstances that create, because there was so obviously you know, and it was hard to talk about at the time because, like, you know, you borderline, like, I'm talking about, like, capitalizing on a commercial opportunity via my brother's death, right?
Yeah.
But looking at it, like, a bit more cold and seeing it from that perspective, like, Tom had written this great album. Suddenly, everyone was aware that he had died, the meaning behind the album, what the songs were about. And we had all these eyes on us suddenly. And it was just like, it was such a crazy time. It was such a crazy time. And but just those moments when we would play Gone with the Wind, it would be like, we would stop and the whole crowd would just be making this noise. It was like cheering, whistling, screaming. He was like stood on stage, pulled it in his out, and it was just every night it was this deafening noise. But it wasn't a cheer. Do you know what I mean? People weren't cheering, like, oh, great job playing that song, guys. It was like this emotional wail of thousands of people. It felt like, I don't really know what to, like I say, there's nothing to really compare it to. It was a really, really special and unique experience, and I will never forget it, and I'm grateful to have had it, and everything that it brought us personally and for the band as a whole. But as we said, that was then, and this is now. But yeah, that Australian tour was the beginning of that, and you know, it was so raw. I was still in total shock that Tom was gone. You know, we're boarding the plane to go to Australia 3 weeks after the funeral. I thought, like, what the fuck are we doing? Like, this is bananas. And every night, you know, it was just people crying in the front row. I'm short-sighted, to be honest, but every night I could see the front row. People crying, signs. I would meet people all the time. And they would always be crying. You know, which brought its own challenges for me. But
of course,
it was a weird experience that, not many people will probably ever go through anything like that.
But in hindsight, and I know that obviously where Architects are at in 2023, you guys are just going to the next level every fucking year. In hindsight, though, do you think you guys should have stopped for a little bit, even 6 months, a year, or are you happy that you kind of just kept going because look what's happened in the years since?
No, it was perfect, and I'll tell you why. Because I've got lots of people that loved Tom, who knew him personally and had close relationships with him, that had touring lives. And they would go off back on tour because they had to, because it's their job. And they would just be, no one got it. Like, I remember speaking to V-Man from Slipknot. I say from Slipknot. V-Man to me is V-Man from Our Guitar Tech.
Or, yeah, sure.
From Cry for Silence, who was one of our dearest, and he's still a dear friend of me. And, you know, we'll always have a really close relationship with him. You know, he was one of the 20 odd people at Tom's funeral, and for him, he had to go to that funeral and then go on tour with Slipknot. Now, I'm sure the rest of Slipknot and their crew were sympathetic to the fact that he had lost one of his close friends, but he was completely alone in that experience, in his grief. Whereas I went on tour with all of Tom's close friends who were all grieving and who were all going through the same thing as me. So I was surrounded by support, and I was surrounded by people that could relate with me. And so it meant that for me, it was the perfect place to be. Like, there was nowhere better for me to be. There was nowhere better for me to be on a personal level in terms of me processing my grief, beginning that journey at least. And there was nowhere better for the band to be. And it was the opportunity to play these amazing, powerful shows. So it was just like, in turn, you know, Tom had died. It was the worst thing that could possibly happen. in my eyes. Like, I couldn't comprehend life going on. I couldn't comprehend existing without Tom being alive as well. But that had happened. And so everything beyond that happened in a sort of like mystical, perfect, stars aligning kind of way.
And to cap this off, going all the way back to our great friends, the Trolls.
Yes.
With moving forward with this band and these sounds, is this the direction you guys are going to stick to? Is it entirely possible that album number 11 will be K-pop?
No, I'm thinking about it virtually every second of every day. The next album, I think, will be another reinvention, and it won't sound like these last two albums. I want to do something different. I think everyone, the band is now sort of like, okay, let's. I get excited when we get to explore new territory. And so, you know, like, we might fuck it up. I don't know. Well, it might be brilliant. It might be ill-advised. We'll have to wait and see. But I think we'll definitely be stepping into new territory. And we will definitely be providing the Trolls with plenty of ammunition. Plenty of ammunition.
I'm just going to assume it's going to be out in 2024 because this seems to be the trajectory of each album release.
There's going to be an effort to wait. I think maybe 2025, but that doesn't mean there won't be any songs come out. I think we probably will release a few songs over the next couple of years.
Okay.
But our label, we're very, very flexible, and you know, like, speaking from the label's perspective, doesn't make the greatest commercial sense to just keep releasing albums year after year, and not like go out and tour them thoroughly. So we were very grateful that they agreed to do that for Plastic Symptoms for Broken Spirit, but now we kind of need to uphold our end of the bargain.
Yeah,
and
okay.
go and tour both records, and you know, give everyone a little moment, a little bit of time without an architecture record. We have released 10. It is a lot. We're averaging more than one every 2 years, I think. So
just enjoy these two albums. Let's just fucking relax for a year. How about that?
I just find it so hard to do that. But yeah, we do need to try it. But my head is very much in the next album.
Well, you heard it here first, people. Architects will be releasing a K-pop album in 2024, and we cannot wait.
2025. The K-pop album.
2025. Shit, sorry. Okay, good. Yeah.
January 1st, 2025.
Dan, thank you so much, man. I really appreciate your time, and I am very impressed by your podcasting / driving skills here.
I'm quite impressed too.
Good luck with the Australian tour, man.
Yeah, thanks, man.
And we'll catch up soon.
Yeah, man. Thanks very much. Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Thanks a lot, Dan.
Take it easy. Bye.
This episode is proudly sponsored by Audio Technica Australia. Subscribe, rate, and review The Plug on your preferred podcast platform. And follow us on Instagram and YouTube at The Plug with Neil Griffiths and on TikTok at theplug.podcast to stay up to date with episode releases and giveaways.